People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. More than 7,000 times last year, people were released from Ontario jails with no recorded fixed address. It's also estimated that 80% of people in Ontario's provincial jails are there on remand, for example, people awaiting trial. Those are some of the details from a new report from the John Howard Society of Ontario. Called From Incarceration to Encampment, the report offered suggestions to improve outcomes for people being released from jail to try and ensure that they're not being released directly into homelessness. I spoke with the author of that report, and to get a Vancouver Island perspective, I also spoke with the executive director of the John Howard Society of Victoria.
My name is Safia Hussain. I'm the director of policy at the John Howard Society of Ontario, which is an organization in Ontario. We work to build a safer province through research, policy, and evaluation, public education around the criminal legal system.
Hi, my name is Manj Tour, executive director of John Howard Victoria, and we have a number of support programs that we offer for individuals that are leaving incarceration, but also more other services, wraparound supports that we offer, from programs from housing outreach outreach teams to mental health supports and addiction.
And Safia, you've written this new report. Can you tell me how widespread in Ontario is the problem of people exiting jail directly into homelessness?
Well, in Ontario, a report from Incarceration to Encampment found that over 7,400 releases just last year from Ontario jails were flagged as having no fixed address. So that's a conservative estimate, but that represents about 10% of Ontario's unhoused population.
And Manj, do you have any idea what the figure could be in BC? Is anyone looking into this?
We don't have a number. I don't have a number at hand, but what I can share, in 2023, the BC Housing did a homeless count, and their report indicated 6%, just over 700 people were released from a correctional facility with no fixed address. That equates about just over 700 people. And one of the other pieces that I'd share is that working with inside the institutions, we are seeing a greater number of individuals being released with a no fixed address. So that's what I'm hearing from the staff directly. We are also seeing an increase due to the housing crisis as well.
What happens when someone is released and they have no fixed address? Do we have any data or stories or even anecdotes? What is the pathway for people?
I could chime into that one. So we have, there's lots of stories that we hear. Typically, there are discharge teams. There is a community transition teams as well. Unfortunately, with the resources that they have available, it's quite limited. It's providing resources to them. But as you can imagine, as you're being released, there's no place, even let's say to a shelter. You don't know what time you're getting released that day. Typically, shelters are full by 9 o'clock in the morning. You have to wait in line. So even trying to get into supportive housing, there's a long wait list to access those services as well. So typically, the individual's left to their own accord, unless they have family or friends that they're moving in with. So it is very challenging for someone being released and trying to get into supportive housing, and especially with, you can just imagine with the support services that they are needing, typically dealing with mental health and addiction, even other health-related issues, that there is no support mechanism that is transitioning them from the institution right into the community.
Yeah, and I can add to that. I mean, as was just discussed, a lot of people are released, even if they had some release planning while they were inside the institution, if they are released without housing, since there is no dedicated supportive housing in the province currently, they can be released from jail with no phone, no money, no support system, nowhere to go. And oftentimes they find themselves right back in the same sort of conditions that they found themselves in conflict with the law because of in the first place. And so we know that starting trying to rebuild a life in a shelter or in an encampment on the street is no way to foster successful reintegration. So a lot of people will end up do reoffending. It increases the risk of them going right back into jail or sort of being unhoused for prolonged periods.
What are the consequences to, maybe I'll say, society writ large if there are significant numbers of people who are being released from incarceration and have literally nowhere to go?
I can say overall, it's certainly, we have, you know, a homelessness crisis, not just in Ontario, across the country. And people are concerned about public safety issues. If you, like I said, if you're sort of released straight from jail right out onto the streets, that doesn't give people their best shot at reintegration. And it increases the chance of reoffending. It adds to the homelessness crisis. And so you find people just sort of back out on the streets with no supports, nowhere to turn to.
Just to add to that as well, the individuals that are being released, they are wanting that support. They are wanting stable housing. They want to be contributing members of the community as well. They want to work, but without those basic fundamentals of support, that from housing, guidance, and medication and whatnot, it's very difficult to get your feet grounded. And so I think it's our healthcare system, of course, is going to be costing more, because eventually they will. And, you know, if they overdose, they're back in, you know, it's going to be the hospital, their ambulance. So it's a bit of an impact on all levels, from our policing system to our hospitalization, our healthcare system. So that is a huge impact when we don't have, in my opinion, dedicated supportive housing as for individuals that are being released from the institution.
Do we have any kind of systems or planning or anything in place to prevent this from happening as it stands?
I think there is some level of coordination that is being taken place, but it's fragmented and it's limited resources that are implemented. We do have outreach teams, but with that, it's great to have outreach teams, but if there's no dedicated housing, it's only a resource they could provide them, but not true housing per se. So in my opinion, there needs to be better coordination between BC Corrections and BC Housing, as well as healthcare and other nonprofit agencies, to come together to come up with a more of a concrete solution versus the fragmented system that we have.
Yeah, and in the Ontario context, you know, we have reintegration planning inside the institutions. Individuals, particularly with high needs, are connected to a release planner to help connect them to referrals. But a lot of those individuals are released straight out onto the streets, and it's really difficult to action out referrals, especially if you have a number of complex needs without a shelter over one's head. So we have this huge gap, and there are some organizations that run housing in the province, but the magnitude of this issue, as noted, 1 in 6 releases are flagged as having no fixed address, might be released right back onto the streets. The magnitude of that issue calls for a coordinated, urgent provincial response rather than ad hoc solutions.
Now, Safia, according to your report, 80% of people in Ontario provincial jail are on remand. That is, they're awaiting trial or further court dates. How does that play into this whole issue?
Well, certainly, exactly. A huge proportion, even some estimates are saying it's closer to 85%, are on remand, meaning that they are charged with a crime but have not been convicted. And the courts have found that they should await their trial in jail. So these are individuals who may never get convicted, who may have their charges dropped or withdrawn, who may end up not having any sort of criminal record, but they experience incarceration and can also experience housing loss due to that incarceration. So some people might have started, were unhoused when they were arrested. Others might have had housing and lost it as a result of periods in jail where they lost their employment, income assistance was cut off, they were unable to make rent payments. And so they're released right back onto the streets. And especially for those individuals, the impacts of that can be long lasting.
I think for in BC, it's quite high as well. It's about, I think, about 70%, if not 80% as well. The bigger difference between Ontario and BC with remand system, which is a huge impact, is Ontario has actually to release transitional release planning that has taken place from John Howard or other agencies. Where in BC, we don't have that service. We're not part of that integration element, which is a huge miss and opportunity where if we are having individuals that are connected with them from the early onset, when they are getting from the court aspect of it, if they are getting on bail, how are they being supported? Not just by a probation officer, but also an agency that can, have wraparound supports around for them as well. So there's a big difference between Ontario and even Ontario and BC, but even across, I think the country, each province has a different remand and bail system itself. And sorry, the supports that go with it.
Now, it's probably a different conversation entirely than the one we're having today, but I think that stat that you both shared is probably pretty close to accurate for both your provinces of around 80% of people being in provincial jails, distinct from federal jails, being on remand. That seems staggering. I'm not sure a lot of people would realize that. Are there any other just maybe consequences you think it's important to highlight of that or reasons for that or things people should know about just that figure and what it means more broadly to the justice system?
Well, I think there's a trend that's been happening over the past many years, and it's important to consider how that impacts the greater legal system, what this means for people. So, 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have this issue where 85% of people were legally innocent in provincial jails. And if you look across the world, in Europe, I think the number is at around 20% in some places, and they're calling it a crisis, saying we have a huge proportion of people awaiting trial in our jails, whereas we're at 85%. And so I think there are a number of parts that contribute to that, and that we're seeing this increased number of people that are legally innocent awaiting trial in jail. But part of it is a lack of support. So a lot of people, they're charged with a crime, they come before the courts, and they're looking to develop a release plan. But if people are unhoused, if they lack social supports, if they have complex issues, the courts may not be releasing them into the community. And that's in part what's contributing to a higher number of people in jail. And that's where some of these solutions, talking about the need for housing in community, the need for connecting people with supports, it not only helps stabilize people, but it can help address some of the pressures on the system as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's I also bring in the healthcare aspect of it too, is if someone that's dealing with mental health or addiction with a lack of medical care, that also compounds, or even having access to medication is going to compounding. So if we know that if someone's not taking their medication on a daily basis, what impact that's going to happen. So that just adds to these pieces as well.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh, and I'm speaking with Safia Hussain, Director of Policy for the John Howard Society of Ontario, and Manj Tour, Executive Director of the John Howard Society of Victoria. Her conversation was inspired by a report written by Hussain exploring the issue of people exiting jail directly into homelessness. According to that report, more than 7,000 times last year, people were released from jail in Ontario with no recorded fixed address. What do you think a solution to this issue of being released directly from incarceration to homelessness could look like?
So what we're proposing in our report, we have sort of three main solutions. The first is that the province should develop a provincial system of transitional supportive housing for individuals released from jail with nowhere to go. So as we've been talking about, 1 in 6 releases have no fixed address. And so transitional supportive housing can help stabilize people. It helps connect them to healthcare and supports in the community that decrease the risk of reoffending and help increase the chance of reintegration, support long-term positive outcomes. And it's also cost effective because if you look at intensive supportive housing in the community, especially for mental health and addiction supports, it costs around $2,000 to $5,000 a month on the high end, whereas to incarcerate somebody for a month is around $11,000. So this has benefits both for the individual, but for society as a whole. And then we also in the report outline some other solutions to prevent housing loss for short periods of incarceration. So we talked about individuals awaiting their trial in jail and losing housing as a result. We are proposing that Ontario should stop cutting off income assistance for people accused of crimes and incarcerated for short periods. And so in Ontario, if you're hospitalized, your income assistance continues in full for up to 3 full months, and that's to prevent housing loss. And so we're suggesting this should be the same for individuals incarcerated that are accused of crimes and may likely have their charges withdrawn or dismissed. And finally, we're proposing that the government should do some educational campaign work with landlords to prevent undue discrimination in the private rental market and allow people with past criminal legal involvement to rebuild their lives and move on and access housing.
Yeah, I agree with the report. And, you know, that's it'd be great to have the same BC here as well, all the ones that have been mentioned. So I wanted just to add to one piece about the remand piece too. On average, an average stay in BC, someone on remand is about just over 50 days. So, you know, so you can just imagine if someone has housing, is incarcerated, lost their job or the support, they can't make payment. So then they are homeless, but then they're being released within, you know, the next month, but all their belongings are gone. If they don't have a support system to pick those belongings up, and they have lost their housing. So if you just look at that magnitude of, you know, an average stay is, you know, 50 to 60 days, what that could happen. And if they are getting that rent, income supplement that would stay up to 3 months, it would have a huge drastic impact, I think, on the house, on the homelessness aspect of it.
So right now, both in Ontario and BC, if someone is getting income assistance from the provincial government and then they're charged of a crime, they go to jail on remand, they lose that income assistance for however long it is, you say, on average in BC, 50 days, they just lose their income support?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works in Ontario.
And if they're released and, you know, the charges are withdrawn or they're not guilty or whatever, they have no way of getting that income support back?
Yeah, they'll, you know, it's not going to be immediate. Of course, they'll start once they get out. It's a whole process again of activating it.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. There, exactly that. There is often a pause too in terms of reinstatement. It doesn't happen immediately as soon as you step out of jail. So not only do you not get to receive the your compensation to pay for your housing, even after you're released, there might be a period of time where you have no income assistance. And so that also puts people in a really difficult spot if they have nobody to rely on. And especially if they've lost their housing, they're being released with no money, no housing, potentially no supports.
Another piece you've touched on is the idea that there's going to be a lot of stigma for anyone with a criminal record who is trying to access housing, who is trying to rent a place. What do you feel could be the way around that?
So people who have been through the criminal legal system are just trying to rebuild their lives. But there is a lot of stigma associated with a criminal record, with the fact that somebody has been incarcerated. And in some jurisdictions, as we noted in the report, landlords are more and more using criminal background checks and asking about criminal legal involvement in housing applications and using that as a way to exclude candidates. And this is unfair. And actually prevents access to housing, which is such a crucial part of reintegration for individuals. So we're suggesting that the government should do some education work, on the right to housing, how to actualize that, what a criminal record actually means, and how to use it or how to sort of view those kinds of issues in housing applications so that we can promote more fair and equal access to housing.
If there are people out there who might be unsympathetic to issues that are being experienced by people who have been involved with the justice system, what would you say to them about the need for some of these reforms?
So I think as we've touched on here, this is not just about individual, personal outcomes. It also, there's broader societal issues. We have an exploding homelessness crisis across this country. We have encampments in towns and cities, and all levels of government, individuals are looking at ways to address this issue. And this report shows that the criminal legal system is actually acting as a pipeline into homelessness. And so if we're going to address homelessness issues, we need to support people who are getting out of jail with nowhere to go. We also, this has great societal cost. As we noted, the cost of supportive housing is much less than the cost of incarceration. And if we want to address issues around public safety and create safer communities, we need to address the root causes of criminal legal involvement. And that starts with housing. Without shelter over one's head, it's really hard to address other issues, complex issues that individuals have. So this is really crucial, both for individuals that are moving through the system, but for our larger communities.
I think there's another, I'd just like to add that there's a study that came out a couple of years ago, is about approximately 60% of individuals incarcerated grew up in the foster care system. And why I'm sharing that is someone that's been part of the system, it's been that trend has continued essentially being part of the system itself. So in order to change, and in order to recidivism rates to decrease to individuals for public safety, as that's already been mentioned, to really have that impact, we really need to have that supportive housing. We want, you know, public safety is a huge piece, but we do need that housing piece to it, that stability, the supports. It costs so much less compared to incarceration, our tax on our healthcare system and whatnot. So I think that's the big benefit at the end of the day of supporting supportive housing for individuals that are being transitioned out of incarceration.
A lot of what's described in the report calls for things like wraparound supports, individualized timelines and goals. It sounds a lot like what people call for more generally when they're talking about the need for supportive housing at all for any population. How is it different, or like what needs to be different or specific in the case of people who have experienced incarceration, people who are caught up in the justice system?
Well, individuals leaving jails aren't a homogenous group. So there's a lot of differing needs and challenges, but sometimes, especially for folks that have been incarcerated, who have maybe been unhoused for chronically unhoused for long periods of time, they might not just need supports like mental health, substance use supports, access to healthcare, but also life skills. So there might be a need for things like budgeting, food preparation, conflict resolution, all of these pieces to really allow for long-term success in housing. And transitional housing can provide some of those pieces that really helps folks stabilize, helps them succeed, gain employment, reconnect with individuals. A lot of people have, custody issues that might have arisen, other healthcare needs. And so this kind of supportive housing really addresses the complex issues that individuals leaving jail might have, and allows for greater success in long-term housing options.
I also wanted to ask, maybe to return a little bit to that remand piece. In the headlines right now, you might see calls of politicians talking about the idea of bail reform. And I just wondered if I could get some perspective from you two, both involved with the John Howard Society. Like, what do you think people need to know as they evaluate that news coverage about the bail system or bail reform? Specifically keeping in mind that idea you mentioned that in provincial jails, at least maybe like 8 out of 10 people in there are already in there awaiting trial.
I think this ties in to a lot of the issues around bail. A lot of people, as I noted, are awaiting trial in jail because the courts find that they don't have a release plan, and that comes down to a lack of housing often. There's also, people, if they are released on bail, out onto the streets, it's really difficult to follow conditions. A lot of the most serious charges that people are coming to courts with are administration of justice charges. So that means failure to appear in court or breaches of conditions. And oftentimes, if somebody is living on the streets, it's really difficult to remember a court date, to remember what day it is, to follow certain conditions that might have been given to them by the courts. And that's where supportive housing can also come into play. In Ontario, in a couple jurisdictions, not very many, but a couple jurisdictions have bail beds where individuals who are released by the court into the supervision of, you know, a John Howard Society or other organization, they are attached to a caseworker. They receive supervision, making sure that they're following their conditions, but also they're connected to wraparound supports, and they are given a bed, a residence to stay in. And that is really successful. It has proven success rates, and it'll increases the chance of following conditions and reduces the risk of reoffending.
Just to add to that, and that's the biggest piece that we're missing in BC is the bail beds. It is very successful in Ontario, and I think that's where it needs to be expanded in Ontario and across the country. But more in BC, we don't have those beds, and that's that is so critical when you can intervene sooner versus and while supporting the individual. And holding them accountable as well. So I think that's the big element there. So those are the pieces that I would just add to that piece.
And Manj, I wanted to ask you specifically from a BC perspective, another kind of thing we see in the headlines all the time is this idea of secure involuntary care. It's something the mayor in Nanaimo, where I live, is very often advocating for. There's the whole housing continuum, obviously, of supportive housing, housing with wraparound supports. BC is introducing what they call complex care housing, which I think is fair to describe as supportive housing with even more supports and a greater ratio of staff to people living in the housing. And more recently, there have been discussions in the public realm about the idea of secure and voluntary care. And I'm wondering if you have any perspective working with the John Howard Society on the issue as it relates to maybe the intersection between housing and the justice system.
It's a good question. My perspective on that piece would be that ideally, of course, how is that going to be used? And that's been the biggest question. Secure facilities, mandated treatment and whatnot, how is that going to really, and who's actually going to be going into these facilities and whatnot? I think there is individuals that really need a lot of support and care. Is that the right kind of facility? Time will tell. So I think that's one of those pieces there right now is I wouldn't be advocating for it, but I think there's a need for something where intensive support and supervision that is needed, and how those individuals are put into those care. I guess that would be my perspective. I think one of the bigger pieces around when we talk about complex care housing and whatnot with more supports, I think it's not just individual staff. It's about the level of the team that is surrounding that piece to it. Because if we don't have psychiatrists or other professionals within that spectrum, it's very difficult to really provide all that complex care support, because the typical supportive housing has typically been, you know, caseworkers and whatnot. But then without having the other professional lens or psychiatric nurses on site, it is challenging to really support these complex cases.
We've covered a lot of ground today. We started this conversation off with this report that was really detailing the experience of people coming out of the justice system directly into homelessness. I'm wondering if there's anything else that either Safia or Manj, either of you think it's important that people know and take away from this conversation today.
I think for us, we just wanted to highlight, you know, in the context of a growing homelessness crisis across the country, really, this report really highlights the deep link between spending time in jail and spending time on the streets, and points to the need for urgent solutions that I think apply in Ontario, but as we heard today, could also apply in other provinces, including British Columbia. And so we hope that there is consideration among decision makers for some of these solutions, and this allows sort of a path forward and continued discussion.
Mm-hmm. Just add to that, you know, it's the coordination that needs to take place, as Sophia said, about the decision makers between different ministries that needs to take place. And I think it's also about, you know, our system is right now being reactive versus preventative. And I think that's where we need to move towards. And I think this is a part of a solution of making that happen, to be more preventative versus reactive.
Safia, Manj, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Safia Hussain is Director of Policy with the John Howard Society of Ontario. Manj Tour is Executive Director of the John Howard Society of Victoria. We were speaking about a report looking into people in Ontario being released from jail directly into homelessness. That report is called From Incarceration to Encampment.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.